watching other women leaders set examples and mentoring. And one of the quotes that I use in my book is that you can't be what you can't see. And Dr. Marian Edelman said that. And the first partner of California, Jennifer Newsom, she did this film where she talks about how women can't be what we can't see. And I just think that's so true. And I was fortunate to see and be mentored by these women of color and other women leaders who are examples and who helped me start an organization that addressed Asian American women's and health. And so by seeing other women run for office, I was able to do that.
Hello, my name is Emily Jansen, and this is the Leadership is Female podcast. We interview women in the sports and entertainment businesses to teach you the tips and the mindset that will get you to the top faster. Marian Wright Edelman said, "You can't be what you can't see." Let's bring visibility to women who are crushing it in their roles. Join us week after week, season after season, as we reach back to extend a hand to pull you forward. We will lead you forward because leadership is female. Welcome to the Leadership is Female podcast, Mary Hayashi. We are thrilled to have you. And I want you to introduce yourself to the audience, and then we'll dive into all the questions. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Thank you, Emily, so much for having me on your show. I'm really honored to be included. And I guess today we're going to talk about women in politics, my favorite topic. And I have a book. So lots to talk about there. But just briefly, I'm an author. I'm a former California state legislator. But more importantly, I've been a healthcare advocate all my life. I lost my older sister to suicide when she was a teenager. And that had a major impact on me. I was 12 years old at the time and didn't really understand what had happened to her. But, you know, when I got older and, you know, got more active in the nonprofit work, I started an organization dedicated to Asian American women and mental health issues. And so from there, you know, I went on to lead a major ballot measure for California that dealt with mental health. And I was appointed commissioner. I ran for office. I ran several nonprofits at the federal level addressing mental health and other women's health issues. So my personal journey and professional experience sort of blend together because of my sister's passing when she was a teenager and the impact that had on me. And I've given 30 years of my career to advancing women's health issues and mental health causes. So even though I've been many things, and now I work as a public affairs consultant, you know, working with women politicians, which is a lot of fun, I will always be a strong mental health advocate and, you know, women's health advocate. So that's who I am. And again, thank you for having me. I'm really thrilled and honored to spend some time with you.
Yeah, well, so many things of what you said are reasons why you're on the podcast today. Mental health is something that we finally started talking about more. Women's issues are absolutely rising to the top and something we want to continue to discuss. And then also representation. So what was, we had a taste of your journey, but what was your journey like as a Asian American immigrant to become a California State Assembly member?
Well, I wrote a book about it, but I'm from a very conservative, traditional Korean family. So I was born and raised in Korea. We came here when I was 12. I didn't speak any English. My sister had passed away earlier that year. I was so lost. You know, I just remember being lost. And my parents expected me to, you know, get married before like I was 21. And you know, God forbid, like 21 was really old. And, you know, they were, you know, I think they expected me to get married young and have kids and just be happy. That was sort of their expectation. And when I was 19, I enrolled in a women's studies class at Cal State Long Beach. And I didn't know, I really didn't know what it was, but it sounded interesting. I actually thought it had to do with like home economics, how I can be a better wife or a woman. And I took this class and I learned about feminism. And I was introduced to, you know, literature, women's literature by feminists. And that's when I sort of had that aha moment that maybe I can have a different life. Maybe I can do something with my life. So after that, I like moved up to the San Francisco Bay Area. I had some friends who went to Berkeley, and I moved up here and started working at a nonprofit organization in San Francisco. And I remember my first job interview with them. I didn't even ask them how much the position paid. Like in our culture, you just didn't do that. And I was raised to be like this good, silent girl. You know, you have to be like a good girl. You know, not talk too much. Don't ask for money. Always be grateful. So I didn't even ask like how much the position paid. And they hired me on the spot. And I was really excited. And she was like, well, do you want to know how much it pays? And I just remember being very uncomfortable. And so from that to, you know, running for office where you have to make cold calls to men asking for money, you know, soliciting money for my campaign is such a big jump. You know, when I just kind of reflect on that, my, you know, early 20s experience looking for a job, not even being able to talk about how much the position pays, to, you know, like 10 years later, I'm like soliciting for funds from strangers, which is something that my parents said never to do as a good girl. So I, you know, I've come a long way. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I talk about in my book is just watching other women leaders set examples and mentoring. And one of the quotes that I use in my book is that you can't be what you can't see. And Dr. Marian Edelman said that. And the first partner of California, Jennifer Newsom, she did this film where she talks about how women can't be what we can't see. And I just think that's so true. And I was fortunate to see and be mentored by these women of color and other women leaders who are examples and who helped me start an organization that addressed Asian American women's and health. And so by seeing other women run for office, I was able to do that. It wasn't easy though, because I had a lot of cultural barriers that I had to overcome. I mean, just the money and the fundraising is one thing, but to this day, I still ask myself, am I being too aggressive? Am I taking too much credit for my work? Should I be quiet? Should I even say anything? And, you know, those were sort of early trainings that I had as a little girl, where in my culture, that's kind of how we were raised. And it's hard to kind of not do that and put yourself out there. And, you know, when people criticize you, like, you know, you're aggressive instead of an assertive, you're too ambitious because we're not supposed to seek leadership positions. I mean, all of those cultural barriers are still very difficult to overcome. I mean, I've gotten better at it through seeing other women examples. And I think this is why your podcast is so important, because we want women and girls to see what's possible. Mm-hmm. And unless you see examples, it's very difficult to imagine.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. And, you know, your story is such a story of transformation from what you were brought up in knowing how to behave and what was shown and told to you, to transforming into this true female leader. And you did, you wrote a book about it, which is fantastic. And it recently came out. So congratulations. I know what a huge, huge feat that is. book is called Women in Politics, Breaking Down the Barriers to Achieve True Representation. So tell us why you wrote this book and why people should read it.
Well, so thank you for that. And, you know, I am not a writer. I've written two books. And I don't enjoy writing. I find the process extremely difficult. And it took me 2 years to put this book together. But I keep going back to writing because, you know, when I took that women's studies class when I was 19 years old, reading about women literature and feminism really changed my life. And so this is my way of trying to help someone out there, somebody like me, who might be lost and just searching for something. And I think that's why I keep writing, even though it's not my favorite thing. And one of my goals in writing this book, you know, is to inspire other women that they can write their own life path and they don't have to be controlled by their backgrounds or, you know, ethnicities or family histories, and that you can really pursue this if this is your passion, because somebody like me isn't supposed to be here, you know, and I'm not supposed to be running for office and serving in government and becoming a leader. And, you know, I wanted to share my personal story and my own professional and personal journey so that other women can see that they can write their own life path. I mean, that's really the goal of the book. And Mariel Hemingway, actress and a brilliant author, you know, she wrote the foreword for my book. And, so, you know, people asked me, if this is about politics, why don't you have some, you know, one of these politicians write it? And I really wanted to emphasize the fact that my motivation for running for office it has to do with my sister's death and my own, you know, sort of personal reasons. That's why I ran for office, because I was so passionate about changing mental health outcomes and breaking down that stigma and discrimination. And that was my sort of reason for running. And so many women I interviewed for the book had very personal reasons for running. And so I had Mariel, I asked Mariel to write the foreword because she has lost so many people in her own family to suicide. And that really inspired her and motivated her to help others. And so even though the topic is about, you know, women in politics, like what we do in political world, all of us, all these women that I've interviewed come from very, you know, very humble beginnings, had to overcome significant cultural barriers. It's not just me who had these challenges, but, you know, all these women in their own way, you know, had to overcome significant cultural barriers. And I think those could, you know, we find those types of experiences as sources of inspiration. You know, if she could do it, I can do it. And I hope that that's what the book will do for women and girls.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting. Like sometimes the things that other people see in us, we don't see in ourselves, because from the moment I met you today, yeah. I was like, of course you know, had an office position and you've climbed to the top and wrote a book. You have an aura, like you can do anything. And I'm happy that you shared that vulnerability, because a lot of us have those same feelings of like, you know, why me? Or could I really do that? But it's through these stories of other people's success that we should be drawing inspiration. And you shared so many of those stories in your book of your own and other women that you interviewed. Can you share one of those stories of inspiration?
Of course. I mean, they're all amazing women leaders. But one of the younger women that I interviewed out of Florida, she's the Senate Democratic Caucus leader, minority leader. And I know someday she's going to be like the governor of Florida and the president, because she is so amazing. And, you know, she she decided to run for office because her dad was such a great example. He's in politics. He does government affairs work. And he really mentored her and encouraged her to run. But she saw, you know, she worked with him a lot. They have dinner every week. And she really saw him as a role model and thought, you know, I could do that. I could do what he's doing and I could make a difference. And in my mentoring chapter, I actually talk about my mentor, who's a man, and how, you know, and that's okay. We can have male mentors. They should be helping women. and so she talks a lot about the influence that he's had on her, but she was abused by her nanny. And she disclosed that in my book and before the book too. This is something that she talks about publicly and has a nonprofit organization dedicated to preventing sexual abuse. And she was abused by her nanny for, I think, 6 to 7 years in her own home. And her mom has mental illness and often doesn't really know how to engage, you know, and so they relied on the nanny who lived with them and to sort of take care of the kids. And she was the abuser. And she finally, you know, disclosed that to her dad after like 7 years of torture. I mean, in one instance, the nanny, you know, took her to basically get raped by other men. And it was just the most horrific thing that happened to her. And when she disclosed this to her dad, he was so amazing. Obviously the nanny was prosecuted, you know, sentenced, and all of that, but she wanted to work on legislation that would require, you know, them to take HIV test and disclose that test to their victims. And so that really opened her eyes, and she ran for office, and that she used that painful experience to help other victims of sexual assault. And after she got elected to the Florida Senate, somebody encouraged her to run for the leadership position, like the caucus leader. And one of the men said, well, you just had babies, and so you can't possibly do this job. And she said, you know, anytime somebody says I can't do something, I'm going to do it. So she ran, she won. She's the leader now. And she's just an amazing person. And, you know, just like the way I was able to use my own painful experience to advocate for others, you know, she's done the same. So she's, you know, she's an incredible person. And I used her interview throughout the book, not only about the, you know, the sexual assault experience, but the way she works with other women, the mentoring she does, and also her relationship with her dad. You know, and I think that's really great that he was able to show her examples and encourage her to become a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, wow, that story is, what a tragedy. That is awful. But to turn that pain into progress and prevention for others is the ultimate strength. So I want to ask you, because you've done this also, how do you take action? How do women begin to take action when it feels sometimes like there's such a big mountain in front of you and a lot of reasons not to do something standing in your way? What are the first steps to start to, you know, step over those initial hurdles to really make progress?
Well, one of the things I talk about in my book, when I started my nonprofit organization, I had some opposition. Very powerful people in my own community did not want this out there. Like, why are you talking about Asian American women's issues? We could talk about Asian American health, you know, and that should be enough. Like, why are you airing this dirty laundry kind of thing? You know, because there's stigma with mental illness, talking about mental illness. And so, you know, I think for me, I really wanted to do something about, you know, the status of Asian American women in mental health. And, you know, my sister passed away and my family never had like a funeral for her, because in our culture, we don't talk about that. Like it's almost as if she never existed. And so I thought, you know, I'm just not going to be silenced anymore. And I had enormous amount of support from other women, like National Organization for Women, Black Women's Health Project, Latina Health. I mean, all these women of color and other women feminists just supported me and helped me and gave me specific tools. This is how you fundraise. This is how you, you know, build a board of directors. I mean, they offer very practical help. And I talk about that in my book, that you do need that. You need people who can show you through examples. When I decided to run for office, I thought I was like all that. Tipper Gore endorsed me and I was so pumped up. And I thought, wow, I'm great. I've done all these great things. My resume is great. You know, like I'm ready for this. I'm qualified. So I reached out to the local county Democratic Party chairwoman. She was a woman and I was very excited to meet with her. And I told her I had all these endorsements and, you know, Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, Tipper Gore. I had raised like $100,000. I was so proud of myself. And the party chair said, "Nope, you're not ready." She's like, "You know, have you thought about running for city council or maybe a local hospital board?" She's like, "But given your healthcare interest, why don't you run for a hospital board?" And wrote about that experience because women do get discouraged a lot, you know, and we're not seen as like credible, viable candidate a lot of times. You know, we're often underestimated. If we show too much ambition, people don't like that. And so that was really hurtful. I thought, wow, this is really incredible, because I thought I was qualified, but she thought I should wait and, you know, maybe run for something more local and try like local government before going to the state legislature. My opponent had never run for public office either. So I asked her, I said, "Well, are you asking him the same question?" And she didn't answer me. So that's when I realized that it wasn't me, you know, so you really just have to keep going. And it's never just like one magic moment. You know, it's the work just kind of continues. You know, like you win a little bit and then you move forward and then you step back and there's setbacks and things like that. But, you know, you can't ever think, okay, you know, once I get this endorsement, or, oh, once I win this office, like I'm set. It's not like that for women. It's just our experience and sort of like overcoming these challenges just goes on and on and on. It just doesn't seem like it doesn't end really. And so that was an eye-opening experience. I learned a lot from it. And I also, at the same time, I had other women legislators who helped me. You know, other mentors who supported me and said, "You know what, she's not right," or "Don't listen to them. You just need to keep going." And one of the women that I interviewed for my book is LaFonza Butler. She's a U.S. Senator now. But at the time, she was president of the Emily's List. And her advice, which I really love, is do it anyway. Because women often start from position of lack. "Oh, I don't have the experience. Oh, I don't have the money. I don't have the Ivy League education. I'm not a lawyer. Oh, so I probably shouldn't run." And that's more common for women candidates. You know, when I say, "Well, you should run for something," women often think of what they don't have. And so my advice is think about what you do have. Think about what you do bring to the table. Think about the experiences that you have in life, even if it's things like taking care of your parents. I mean, that's experience. Because for men, you know, they don't really think about, they don't have to think about their qualifications because they're automatically qualified. Whereas women, we have to prove that we're qualified. So sorry for the long-winded answer, but I overcome those challenges and, you know, sort of negative attitude towards what I want to do by, you know, working with other women, and just, I had incredible support from other women. And hopefully the book will be a source of inspiration as well. There's really nothing that you can't overcome.
Well, and what I've heard you say, you didn't do it alone. So I think when you find that desire really burning inside of you, think of who's going to support you, who's going to help you along for the ride. Like Mary, you could name so many people who jumped on board and believed in you because you had the courage to speak up. You had the courage to talk about it and share what you wanted to do. And it's a good thing you did, because you were recognized as Legislator of the Year by the American Red Cross, the California Medical Association, and have been featured on Red Book's Movers and Shakers list and Ladies Home Journal's Women to Watch. So with all of that, what does that recognition mean to you?
It's a new year, and I want to welcome a new sponsor to the Leadership is Female podcast, Staffy. That's S-T-A-F-I, and they can be found at getstaffy.com. We are all busy professionals, and we have a lot on our plate, and GetStaffy is here to help. They are a virtual assistant company. They're virtual assistants, legal assistants, receptionists, intake client specialists, sales representatives, and paralegals are thoroughly trained and effectively can manage multiple tasks, from answering customer inquiries to booking your family activities and managing your calendar and appointments. Plus, you get to save costs with our easy subscription-based service. That's getstaffy.com, or reach out to me at Emily Jansen on Instagram, and I will connect you directly to their people. They are a phenomenal company, and we've got an interview with their CEO on the podcast. If you need help, if your company needs help, if you need a virtual assistant that can help save costs and get more done, GetStaffy is the way to do it. GetStaffy.com and mention Leadership is Female, or let me know and I will put you in touch. Let's go. Do you need a keynote speaker for your next conference, ERG meeting, event, or group? I'm here, raising my hand. I help leaders grow their confidence so that they can lead more intentional, goal-directed, fulfilled, and happy lives. We are conditioned from our childhood to stay small. Don't be conceited. Run in the middle of the pack, because if we speak out too much or shine too brightly, we will offend other people. This could not be more wrong. When you are your best, most confident leader, you give others permission to shine too. So, how do we get there? How do we increase our confidence? I love sharing my best practices and proven methods to help leaders grow into who they are meant to be, your most confident, authentic self, ready to take on your next biggest challenge in the office and in your personal life. Get in touch at emilyjansen.com. I don't know about you, but I love learning more about myself. If there's a quiz out there to help me better understand who I am, I'll take it. If there's a journal prompt, I'm using it. But how about a business that helps female leaders communicate effectively while inspiring confidence and trust in those you want to impact? Sign me up. Breakthrough Brands is unlocking clarity for women leading progress. They build leadership brands for women to discover what inspires them, define what drives them, and unlock how to share their brands with others. Do you want to gain clarity on your personal brand? Shoot me a note at leadershipisfemale@gmail.com. or on Instagram, and we will introduce you to the women who will help you unlock your leadership brand. That's breakthroughbrands.com.
Well, I really, I really love that you have like sports background, because I authored a bill on concussion. And I got interested in concussions because of the mental health impact, actually. And a couple of the, you know, football players died by suicide. And so I got really interested in it. And I learned that women's soccer is the number one, number one reason for concussions in women in sports. And the incidents are a lot higher than football, actually. And so it really opened my eyes, because I thought, wow, you know, football kind of dominates that conversation. So I authored a bill that basically said, you know, if there is a game or practice in, you know, in school, it, public school, all schools in California, the kids have to be pulled from the game and they need to be cleared to play again, because it's the concussions get, you develop permanent brain injury when you don't heal from the first concussion and if there's a multiple concussion. So I passed one of the toughest return to play laws in the United States. I modeled it after Washington State, and I was really proud of that work. And so the American Red Cross, when they recognized me for that work, I was just really honored and humbled. But, you know, all these awards are just, I mean, to me, they're just not recognition of me, but the issues, you know. And so I really see that, like, when I think about the Red Cross Award, which I'm really proud of, it really has to do with the fact that the concussion bill was monumental. That legislation, I think, will make a huge difference. And I know it has already, but, you know, I think it just, it's another sort of, you know, groundbreaking legislative achievement for the people of California. So that's kind of how I view those things. It's kind of embarrassing to list them, you know. It's
like, oh no, you deserve all that recognition of all the work that you put in to get it done. And I'm sure that there were a lot of hurdles that you had to get over in order to get those bills passed and do the work that you have done in your career. So what was the biggest hurdle you had to overcome, and how did you do it, and what did you learn?
Well, there isn't like one, but there's a chapter in my book where I talk about what I call misidentification. There's extensive research on this topic, believe it or not. When I was in the legislature, people used to call me Fiona, and she's a colleague who we got elected around the same time. She represented San Francisco. I represented Oakland and the East Bay area. And people would often confuse us. They'll call me Fiona, they'll call her Mary. And there's only like two Asian women in the legislature, but they couldn't figure out who was who. And I know it sounds kind of silly, and I just laugh it off, you know? I just kind of go along with it. And then I was able to get chairmanship of a very powerful committee, Business and Professions Committee, and very contentious and a lot of subject matters that, you know, touch a lot of lives, including pets. And people get very upset about pets when something happens to their dogs or something, we're trying to do something to the pets. And people would say that, you know, I was assertive and aggressive, you know, and they would criticize me for my style. And what I've figured out is that people, and this happens to not just me, but women, you know, people get way too focused on our style over substance. Like, what is she wearing? You know, like the press talks about, you know, women politicians' clothing as opposed to, you know, what she's working on or what she's about, you know? And it was really tough to try and make people understand, like, the reason why you don't remember my name is because I'm not important. And misidentification actually happens to women of color a lot more than, you know, other women, because people just don't want to learn who we are. And there's only two of us. It's not like there's like 10 of us, but people would confuse us and, you know, call me Fiona. And thinking back, it was really difficult, because as Asian women, I think the stereotypes are, we're supposed to be quiet, we're supposed to be grateful. You know, there's no Asian women CEO in the Fortune 500 companies. You know, we're not seen as leaders. You know, we're like smart scientists, kind of techie, good at math type of thing. And I think it really took an emotional toll on me. And I didn't realize that until much later. And I started reading these studies about misidentification of people kind of leads to depression. And sometimes, because you just think that, like, if I was your supervisor, you're going to remember my name because I'm important. But the fact that people didn't remember me, even though I was a legislator, and then when they did remember me, they thought that I was aggressive and mean. And because we're not supposed to be assertive, Asian women are not supposed to be assertive, and we're not supposed to be leaders. And so that kind of sort of racial bias, I think, was very difficult. And so if you asked me to like pinpoint like one thing, that was something that I think was very difficult to sort of deal with. And when I was in the legislature, like I don't correct people. If somebody like says my name, you know, wrong or something, I'm not going to correct them. I just roll with them because as a legislator, you want to be liked and you don't want to be mean. So you just kind of roll with things and just kind of laugh it off, you know? I went to a reception in Sacramento where this organization was honoring me, and they introduced me to another business executive, and he called me a cute Oriental. Like he said, "Oh, I didn't realize our author of our bill is a cute Oriental." And that, I wrote that in my book actually, because it just seems so outdated to call somebody that. But you can't get mad. You just have to. I at the time I just laughed off, you know. And so when I think back. I think that is one thing, you know, being an Asian woman in that space where it's mostly men at the time and very few Asian American women serving in the legislature, it was difficult emotionally, I think, to deal with all that and not being able to express how I really felt. And, you know, women are supposed to get along. We're supposed to be coalition builders. We can't show our ambition. We have to prove our qualified. We have to be likable. We're a consensus builder. And when you don't show those stereotypical traits, you know, you get penalized for that. And I feel like when I was chair of the committee, you know, I definitely got front of the sort of criticisms because when I try to exercise my power or try to be assertive or try to have an opinion, you know, people didn't like that. So anyway, that is one thing that if you ask me one thing, that is one thing that I still sort of reflect on a lot. And I wrote about that in my book and how to overcome it. You know, we all have this habit of self-talk, I think, you know, and I do that. And, you know, I think just emotionally, we just need to be kinder to ourselves and have that self-talk, be positive and have compassion. Because when I think back, I was like, you know, I was like having this wrong kind of talk with myself, like, you need to toughen up. Like, you know, and I need to not do that. I need to like care about myself and how I, you know, and I kept thinking like, no, you need to adjust. You need to kind of, you know, model somebody else. You know, this isn't working. And I was really hard on myself back then. And I just wish that I hadn't done that. Mm-hmm. So I try to have, you know, more positive, compassionate self-talk, because that's the most conversation you can have with yourself, I think.
So last question before the final four, when you are not trailblazing, leading, running, writing, what are you doing?
Oh my goodness. I think it's okay to talk about this because it's becoming more mainstream, but I am fanatic about astrology.
Cool.
Yeah. And horoscope. And so I don't know if you're into that sort of thing, but when I started my nonprofit organization in my 20s, I had very little experience managing people. And I often wanted to sort of better understand where they were coming from. And I didn't have that many, I just didn't have tools, you know? And I remember like looking at their birthdays and their horoscope and just trying to understand their personality traits better. Like, oh, you're a Virgo, so you're really good with details. And I know it's a little, I know it's silly, but at the time it was kind of helpful and I've been following it ever since. So I don't know if you know Susan Miller. She's a really famous horoscope astrologer. Like she did everybody, you know, in, you know, UK, all, you know, the princes and queens, and she does all their horoscope and astrology. So sometimes I would, you know, I mean, you can't go anymore in person, but she does web, you know, web and Zoom events now. But like I would go to her events and I would follow, you know, those types of, you know, thinkers. And that's my fun. That's my escape.
I love that. It's so unexpected, but the origin of your initial interest was so true to, you know, becoming the woman you are today and growing. And I love that. I love
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you never know, because there's just still, you know, like stigma associated with that topic too. People look at me weird when I say I'm really into that kind of stuff.
Oh, I am a curious person through and through. So I think it's so interesting. I would be like, oh, can you tell me anything about my...
Yeah. What's your birthday?
August 3rd.
Oh, you're a Leo. No wonder. I'm August 13th.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. No wonder. Because you're positive and just, you know, Leos are very generous and it's the sun. We're ruled by the sun. So definitely a leader, made to be a leader. So yeah, Leo's a great sign.
I love that. I am married to a Leo also, which, in some ways is challenging, but in other ways it is amazing because we're just pushing each other for more and supporting each other through it. So it's pretty
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. I think male Leos are a little different though.
Yeah. We are not the same.
Yeah. So that's what I'm doing.
We are not the same. All right. With that, let's get into the top four takeaways. Number one, what is your best piece of advice for women to apply today so that they can level up tomorrow?
Thank you for that. And I sort of mentioned that earlier, but I think the best way to summarize my book is to quote LaFonza Butler's quote. When I interviewed her, she said, do it anyway. And so, you know, women often start, you know, from place of lack. You know, we think about what we don't have or what type of experiences we don't bring to the table. And I think we should think about what we do bring to the table, you know, what our experiences are. So I want people to start thinking about that. And even if you have doubts, because I had doubts about running, do it anyway. So that's my one piece of advice.
Where are you traveling to next?
Oh, I'm going to Las Vegas tomorrow.
What is your pump up song?
Okay. So I love Girl on Fire, Alicia Keys. But recently, and this is not a pump up song, but you made me think about this. Recently, I was at a conference actually a couple of weeks ago, and this amazing artist painted John Lennon's like portrait while he was playing the song, Imagine. And he like finished the product by the time the song was over. Mm-hmm. And I was so moved by it. And I mean, I always liked that song, but that's been on my mind. I love that. I love that song. It's very relevant to what's happening today, I feel like.
That's so cool. And then finally, and I've mentioned a few quotes, but which one is your favorite?
You can't be what you can't see, because that's true for men as well. Men need to see more men role models. You know, like the second gentleman we have, he's so supportive of Kamala Harris, and he just seems to love that role. And I think that's a great example of what men could see and learn from, because just like women, they can't be what they can't see. So that's my favorite quote.
So where can we grab a copy of your book? Where can we follow along with your journey?
My website is the best, maryhayashi.com. But my book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the major retailers. One website that I love to promote is bookshop.org. They contribute to your local bookstores. So they support small business, brick and mortar in your community. So I recently started promoting them quite a bit. And so my book is also available on their website.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today on the Leadership is Female podcast.
Thank you, Emily. I really enjoyed this and really honored to be part of your show.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us today. Time is your most precious resource, and it means the world that you spent it with us. Please help us reach more people who need to hear these interviews by hitting the subscribe button and the 5-star rating on your iPhone. Do you know someone who could benefit from this interview? Please share it. Take a screenshot and post to your Instagram stories, copy the link and share on LinkedIn, or text that link to your colleague. The Leadership is Female podcast exists to showcase female leadership in sports and entertainment and give you the tips to level up. We will extend a hand back to lead you forward. Extend the same hand by sharing this with someone who needs to hear it. One last thing, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Leadership is Female. Now, take this lesson and run. Let's go.